everyone. Welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet, and why. This week, we're talking about disruptions to service at the social network X, Workday, and MasterCard, and why it's so important to quickly and accurately identify the root cause of an outage. And we'll also keep you up to date with the latest global outage figures. I'm Barry Collins, and I'll be hosting today with the amazing Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst at Cisco Thousand Eyes. As always, we've included chapters in the episode description below, so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't already, we'd love you to take a moment to give us a follow over at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. Let's get going, and we're starting with that disruption at X. On March the 10th, social media platform X experienced an outage. What seemed to be the cause?
What we can say is what we actually saw. So if you actually think about what we're doing from a Thousand Eyes perspective, we're actually emulating user interactions. So therefore, we then saw the effects of it. So what appeared to happen is there was actually a large-scale DDoS attack on X's resources or on X's servers there. Now, a DDoS attack is basically where we're going to try and flood a server or an endpoint with sort of traffic. So one of the common ways to do that is with a whole bunch of packets, for example. So you're just going to flood that. What that would then manifest itself with is what we're seeing is sort of 100% packet loss. But we're going to see that effectively at that edge as we start to go into that server point. And that's exactly what we saw here. So we actually saw these characteristics, which were indicative of some sort of DDoS attack. So we saw multiple regions impacted at the same time. So the commonality at that point is the end server or the end systems there. And we saw that 100% packet loss, 100% forwarding loss, I should say, across multiple carriers at that ingress point where they start to interface to, in this case, X servers.
There were several periods of disruption throughout the day. Is it typical for this type of DDoS attack to cause repeated problems?
So if you think about the denial of service attack, a DDoS attack, so we're trying to deny service to the endpoint or that service itself. So there won't actually be one access point to that environment. You know, we're thinking about distributed environments, distributed service, different architectures. And effectively what you're sort of seeing is this ever-changing attack plane. If you think about sort of how a DDoS attack could be launched, it's actually essentially or typically launched from bots, which are distributed around the world. And then they sort of generate all this traffic and have amplifying effects where they then sort of impact these endpoints. So obviously combine these signals together to understand that we have this high loss rate. Therefore, we're looking at that hindering the connection to it. So see the impact at a TCP level where we're hindering the connection and therefore the interaction to the systems themselves. Now, depending then on sort of how the service is one, these attack plans are changing, but then how you sort of go about mitigating this. So you have to kind of remember a lot of these systems are sort of under attack on a daily basis. And there's all sorts of mitigation processes in place. Now, this can involve a number of different techniques. You might see one long disruption. So we start to see this and it's extended period of 100% packet loss. Then if that moves or shifts or the way the mitigation is being done essentially in the back end behind the service, what you might see is we've actually sort of plugged one gap or we've resolved it or we've diverted traffic away. We've black holed a certain amount of traffic and then the attack plan's changed. So you see this period of recovery when some mitigation technique kicks in, then it might be a new attack or it might be a different attack vector. And so therefore we're coming in a different angle. So absolutely, you can see that. But what we saw here was a commonality essentially across each one of these disruptions. So the disruptions lasted sort of around 8.5 hours in total. And what we saw was in large extended periods of this loss rate, again, which kind of shows some sustained attack on that site there. Had it been just a load issue, so we saw something caused by an external event that's happening, all of a sudden people want to log on for ticket prices, you'd have seen this load rate go up. And then you might have seen this period of a stepped account as we saw. But what we sort of saw here was almost like this cutoff of the service. Although it wasn't quite a lights on, lights off, you saw a sharp degradation where all of a sudden the load increase on this environment. So say then we saw these periods where it was actually sort of mitigated or it appeared to go through some sort of mitigation. And then we had another attack to the point where if we actually looked at the last one, the last instance of this, we actually sort of saw this stepped down in terms of the loss rate coming there as the final mitigation or the mitigation is actually sort of put into place there.
What are the telltale signs of a DDoS attack?
So there's several types of signs that we go for. And again, remember, we're looking for this sort of commonality. So straight away, we're going to see this because we are denying a service and we're looking for the effects of that attack. So we're going to see this high percentage of packet loss. So we're going to see 100% forwarding loss. You're then going to see that distributed across different providers. So that last point in, we're going to see that sort of commonality is there. You're typically going to see this impact in multiple geographies. So that's what an attack kind of looks like. As I said, these sort of attacks happen all the time, and there's a whole bunch of mitigation techniques that can be put into play. Now, they also have sort of signals themselves. So you can actually shift the traffic, so re-advertise your network, sort of using a BGP route change. And what we'll then start to see is either take that traffic to a scrubbing site or offloading that traffic base. You're looking to relieve the pressure. You can always do the same thing sort of by through changing the DNS, so actually resolving to somewhere else when it goes through there. So in those cases, we'll see name changes. So the endpoint effectively will change where we're going to. We still see the 100% packet loss, but we'll see that. But also if we come down through the stack, we'll see different autonomous systems inserted to the path. We'll see a route change, but that will be indicated that we'll have some sort of route change there at BGP level. Now, we can also sort of black hole that traffic. So what that means is we're going to take that traffic behind the scenes and we're going to then sort of put it into effectively dump it. We're just going to black hole it so it doesn't go anywhere. So again, you see the loss rate, but you won't see anything essentially indicative of that, the route changes or those taking place. Or you might see it change to that black hole. Then if we're thinking about other things in the backend system, you could almost take it and just basically spread that traffic out. Because if we think about what we're trying to do, so effectively almost put it into some sort of load balancer or aggregator, as it were, in there. Because if you think what we're trying to do is we're trying to flood a particular a server to stop, so it's always answering queries, so nobody else can actually get to it. I'm too busy or too busy, therefore it can't answer it, so something times out there. Now, if in that back end you're able to sort of spread the traffic out, as it were, so it floods over a larger plane from there, what you can actually do is you're sort of rate limiting the traffic or rate limiting the flow. So therefore, then what you're doing is you might then incur latency, but you still protect the integrity of your back end server or your back end systems. So they're still able to operate, albeit at a slower rate because they've been sort of being drip fed the traffic.
Workday experienced disruption on March the 17th. Tell us what happened here, Mike.
What we actually sort of saw here was effectively an issue to the application. So you could actually log on to Workday, then you got some sort of error message coming up. What then, again, looking back at the signals, what we actually saw, we could actually sort of see the system was 100% available. So I could get to that front door, I could get to that server. But if you actually tried to transact on it, not necessarily the log on, but I tried to actually sort of retrieve information, then nothing was coming back and I had a complete failure at that transaction level, so interacting with the system. Then at the same time, again, looking at those combining of signals, if I was actually looking at the network connectivity, again, from any region, I could actually reach these multiple data centers. So I could get to any one of the sort of Workday data centers from a distributed perspective, but it was just then when I actually tried to transact on it, I couldn't do that. And also at the same time, if I was actually on the console, what I got back was an error message that said service is unavailable. This is slightly different to what we normally see if we're looking from an HTTP error, because this was something that was generated from the application itself.
The application seemed to have some error handling that prevented the problem from getting worse. Can you explain what you saw?
It wasn't essentially stopped the problem from getting worse, although that is what these sort of mechanisms are put in place. But what it was actually doing, if you actually look through how the connectivity, so we make the connection, you should log on to the system. And then what appeared to be happening if we were looking through the waterfall, which gives us sort of that component as the page is actually rendered down. If we're actually looking at that, what we saw was a redirect, which redirected away from a Workday domain into a separate domain or a different domain at that point there. But at the same time, it went to this whole bunch of static content. And this static content was effectively where we're putting up the test card. So this service availability, and you can sort of see that in there. These sort of mechanisms are in place, as you said, to kind of stop some, if there in the cases, if there's going to be like something like a race condition occurring or something in the back end that's there. So what happens is it's within the application itself, it has some sort of a check to say, okay, there's something wrong with here. And therefore, then we're going to do this redirect. And it was actually a permanent redirect. So there's three HTTP 302, which sent us to this new domain.
This incident happened around the same time as a feature release, but it turns out this wasn't the cause. A good reminder not to jump to conclusions, would you say, Mike?
Absolutely. So Workday actually came out and made a point to say that this wasn't attributed to the recent feature release that they actually just done. But you say, you know, a normal reaction is this went on, therefore this was a cause and effect type of a situation. And this is then why it's really important to sort of look at that holistic service delivery, because the problem is actually jumping to those conclusions. In this case, Workday owned the application. But if you're thinking about your own application and there's something's gone on, what you might do at that point is actually start to roll back that feature release or that change or that configuration change. And without any sort of visibility into where that responsible area or that fault domain actually lies, you could actually sort of waste time. So you roll it back and you still haven't resolved the problem. So now you haven't actually put the patch or the feature release that you intended to do in place, and you still got this problem. But now you have two differentials you actually need to try and troubleshoot. So you have to start again. So yeah, the first stage is, yes, be aware these things are going on, but then sort of check across holistically to understand and then sort of narrow down that fault domain. In this case, we were able to say no network issues, the front end systems are available. It's when we actually try to do the transaction. And then again, there was this very helpful error message that was being sent back from the application itself. So combine those signals together, you can actually point to the fault domain being with the application. And therefore, then you can actually make a decision to say, if it was your application, do we need to roll back that feature? If it's nothing to do with that, let's look somewhere else within the stack to see what was going on.
MasterCard payments were disrupted on March the 9th. Explain what you saw there, Mike.
How this actually manifested itself was this inability to basically use a MasterCard that was attached to an e-wallet or the physical card itself on some sort of online payment system or transaction machine itself, so some of the third-party systems. It appeared to specifically impact MasterCard itself. So at the same time, you could still transact with other credit cards or other debit cards or electronic cards within the wallet. There also seemed to be some sort of flow-on effect. So things like if I had a MasterCard associated with Apple Pay, or I was using a MasterCard doing an online payment, so I was doing that verification in the back end there, that would also fail at this time and come back with a timeout the error message.
Since MasterCard payments weren't working through mobile wallets or payment acceptance providers such as Square, might businesses have initially assumed that Square or their mobile wallet was the source of the issue? This underscores the importance of quickly diagnosing the responsible party of a disruption, right? Determining whether it's you or a third-party provider?
In this case, we're actually looking, we saw it was a MasterCard, and a very easy way to sort of verify. Anecdotally, I was actually able to ask some vendors if this occurred. They said, yeah, we could actually then just swap a different card out. So in this particular case, I might either resort to cash, that old-fashioned way, or I could actually put another card on play to actually verify it. But if we take that to a wider scope, so we're looking at the applications itself, rather than, again, jumping to a conclusion, we want to sort of combine the signals. So if I'm looking at this, I'd said, right, we can see that it's only impacting MasterCard. There didn't appear to be any significant network issues. But also we're talking about a wide-scale disruption here. So the chance of impacting every network at the same time is relatively small. So again, our common aggregating point here was actually the MasterCard itself. It also then didn't appear to be impacting any other financial institutions. So therefore, we can narrow it back down to that one system, or then third-party systems involved. So there wasn't any transaction gateway itself, because otherwise we'd have seen it impacting other vendors who are using the machines themselves. Interestingly enough, it was also irrespective of which card it was. So you know you have a MasterCard associated with a bank or an institution itself. The commonality in this case was MasterCard. So take this to the wider same. This is what we're doing. We're isolating what is our common point. So what is our aggregating point? This is essentially where we're looking for our fault domain. So does the problem occur on the network? Is it occurring with the application? Is it occurring with some sort of function within the application itself, or some infrastructure with the application? So we talk about back-end services here. So this is the idea of combining those signals together to understand where my commonality is, and that's where my fault domain lies.
Does this disruption also highlight the importance of having multiple payment cards with different providers to step in case one fails?
In this case, it seems like a straightforward one. So people might carry multiple credit cards, or they have different ways of making payment systems, or as I said, they could actually use cash. What it really does is sort of highlight this is of having these backup plans or these processes in place. This may be that, okay, we can't afford to fail. We're going to have multiple CDNs. Or it may be that it doesn't matter if we're down for 5 minutes because the actual impact to us is going to be less. So it's really about assessing your environment and your requirements, and then sort of understanding the risk versus the cost, essentially, to sort of deploy multiple redundant systems. You can have redundancy upon redundancy upon redundancy to sort of get around from this, but at some point, you will get some sort of failure or some perfect storm that takes something down. And at that point, what it really becomes is that what I need to do when I have a failure is identify that fault domain and then know which process or what playbook do I need to initiate to reduce the impact on my users.
Thanks for a deep dive into those outages, Mike. And now let's turn to the overall outage trends. What have you seen over the past fortnight from March 3rd to March the 16th?
So global outages over this period sort of returned to a downward trend. Now, this is a return to a downward trend that we saw sort of around mid-February. So the first week we saw a 5% drop. This was a drop from 447 to 425. And then the following week was 11% reduction. This actually wasn't mirrored within the US, where we saw altitude initially increased by 5%. So they rose from 189 to 199. But then that second week, they decreased by 22%, dropping from 199 to 154.
And what was the percentage of US-centric outages in this period?
So in this period, we actually saw 44% of all outages attributed to the US. This is actually a drop from 46% the previous period. But this is also this maintenance of this anything from 40% or greater. So if we go back to 2023, we're sort of seeing an average over 2023 of in the region of sort of mid 30%. That rose to 40% or greater within 2024. And now we're seeing that continue into 2025.
And that's our show. Please give us a follow and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. We really appreciate it. And not only does this ensure you're in the know when a new episode's published, it also helps us to shape the show for you. You can follow us on LinkedIn or X at Thousand Eyes, or send us a note at internetreport@thousandeyes.com. Until next time, goodbye.